Good morning to all of you out there in Prince George's Chemical Waste. This is Uncle Don again with Uncle Don Reads the Comics. That's the name I stole from the radio announcer of the 40s, who is alleged to have called his kiddie listeners little bastards on the air. But, as old and faithful listeners, you know the drill. I'm here again to entertain, enlighten, and outrage. This is CFUR Radio 88.7, and I am Uncle Don, sometimes. Today's show is sponsored by the United States Central Intelligence Agency, whose new motto is, Proudly Overthrowing Fidel Castro Since 1959. I hope that my faithful listeners, both of them, will forgive me if I come up with some straight news from time to time. Trust me. For instance, the Senator of the University of Northern British Columbia is considering extending the sessional dates for the fall semester for those students who will be traveling to the United States in November to act as election observers. It seems probable that the dates will not be changed for all 3,500 students to accommodate the small proportion that will be going south and missing a fortnight's classes. Student volunteers are expected to be absent from classes from the 26th of October through the 11th of November, following the American elections on 5 November. UNBC President Charles Jago has gone on record as saying there will be no money in the university budget to help student volunteers, but all professors will be prevailed upon to be as flexible as possible in helping these volunteers to make up lost work and reschedule exams. This is considered to be a valuable opportunity that will complement the formal studies at the university. Teaching assistants will be encouraged to give extra help to returning students, and it is expected that some professors of international studies and political science will give credit to their student volunteers, and some may waive final exams for them. In the second week of the fall session, the 9th through the 13th of September, applications will be solicited from students to fill the quota of 33 positions allocated to UNBC by the World University Service of Canada. The selected volunteers will join the 567 students from other Canadian universities for an intensive week of training in Ottawa before heading for a week at their respective monitoring positions. A committee of professors from the International Studies and Political Science faculties will choose the UNBC students to serve as observers. The Minister of Foreign Affairs has agreed to provide matching funds for student travel accommodation and meals. Individual students will be expected to solicit or provide money on their own. Canada was chosen to provide foreign monitors of the coming elections, as we are not perceived as being foreign enough to offend the sensibilities of Americans, who are kind of ticklish about foreigners since last September. The association's goal is to place at least two Canadian student monitors in each of the 435 congressional districts which were closely contested in the 2000 elections. These students will watch for any irregularities and will report them to the designated American federal elections officials. These officials have agreed that any irregularities will be reported, in turn, to the press. The association calculates that at least 230 of these 435 congressional districts require Canadian student observers. An additional contingent of students will monitor the voting in the closest 20 senatorial races. Under the American electoral system, all congressional seats are up for election this year, while one-third of the Senate seats are being contested. All 50 state governors' jobs will be up for grabs, and 28 of them will be watched by volunteers. The association is seeking a total of 600 Canadian student volunteers and alternates to go to the states for the election on 5 November. The largest number of volunteers will be allocated to Florida, where Jeb Bush, the brother of the president, will be running in a tight race for re-election. It will be up to association officials in Ottawa to choose the lucky students who will be sent to Florida, California, and the southern states, and who will be stuck in the frigid north. Florida will be a target for careful scrutiny due to alleged irregularities in the 2000 election. The United States Immigration and Naturalization Service has agreed to issue special visas to the volunteers and waive the requirements of normal visitor visas. I think this means that volunteers will not be checked for criminal records or whether they had ever smoked pot. The U.S. government seems to realize that it is important to convince world opinion that this coming election is clean. They're still smarting from the allegations that came from Son of a Bush's election. Uncle Don will attempt to interview returning UNBC students on the air. I will be especially interested in hearing of the experiences of those who might make it to Florida or other backward southern states. Do you read the Prince George Free Press? It is often worth the read, if only to see what asses people make of themselves in answering the street wisdom question of the week. And then, of course, there are the irregular letters by Julia Syrup and her ilk bemoaning the deterioration of morals, her morals, and the way the lambs have strayed from the word of God. Not the Jewish or Muslim God, mind you, just her particular fundamentalist Christian version. Funny thing about this God, it seems to have many of the properties of a chameleon. Maybe it was not man that God made in his image, but the chameleon. I need to think about that one. On 18 July, Cam McAlpine wrote an editorial in the Free Press headed, "The Emperor Has No Clothes. Cam is getting acerbic as he ages. Good for him." In this editorial, he takes a few telling shots at the United States of America and its leader, the son of a Bush. He says that empires have come and gone throughout history, each one thinking it was permanent. The present American empire is no different. Its rule will end. McAlpine then takes on American rejection of the International Criminal Court very well. Give the Free Press a read. You have literally nothing to lose, and it sure beats Izzy Asper's local fish wrap, The Citizen. In the same issue of the Free Press, Jack Bleeler also takes a shot at the U.S. His target this week is the futile American war on drugs and the way they are pushing Canada around in general. Give him a chance. He has his own brand of humor that you may not like. If you have no sense of humor, go back to your bingo. Say, do you realize that the age of miracles is not past? Once, when God and his scribes thought that the world was flat, he caused the sun to stop in the sky. Now an old man in a plexiglass Mercedes has caused a single day, namely World Youth Day, to last an entire week. And what a week it has been. Those who are tuned into the news have heard breathless reports of every time this old transvestite has broken wind. For those of us who do not share the Catholics' quaint beliefs, this has been the longest week since the O.J. Simpson trial. Once Moses spent years wandering in the wilderness, and this was considered a feat of enough import to record in the Bible, but it was not a miracle. Now it has been declared a miracle when the Pope walked from his airplane all the way down the steps to the tarmac in Toronto. Hell, I've done that trick myself. I don't suppose it was a true miracle when the Roman Catholic Church had the audacity to speak for all of the world's young people, Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, Hindu, animist, and a whole catalog of other religions, not to mention us atheists. It was just ordinary audacity. What was a miracle was that the Catholic Church managed to get the cash-strapped city of Toronto and the likewise impecunious province of Ontario to pick up the tab for this Youth Day party. May I compare this to the miracle of the loaves and fishes? Condolences to all of the citizens back east who do not share the superstitions of the Catholics yet have to pay for the security and cleanup after suffering the inconvenience of this vast, long party. Anecdote time on Uncle Don's weekly diatribe. I told you before of a couple of the adventures I had traveling with Chris, the British escaped lawyer, and his wife Jenny, the Australian nurse. You know, of course, that an adventure is an ordeal that you survive. Here's another adventure. We were traveling on the well-worn Gringo Trail that was used by many thousands of people in the early 70s to go between Europe and Australia overland. One leg of this route involved travel by rail through the island of Java in Indonesia. We chose to go third class on this route. It was not the lowest class, as one could take a chance of riding on the couplings, but it was spare. There were no seats on this third class train. If there ever were any, they were removed the last time our car was cleaned, and wooden benches replaced them. A car that was designed for perhaps 50 or 60 had untold hundreds of passengers and their chattels. You have to realize that Indonesians did not have American Express cards. Instead of carrying a credit card, we figured that they all carried the universal currency, chickens. Their motto was, "Chickens, don't leave home without them." And each traveler took along with the chickens as many infants as possible, preferably ones with diarrhea. This trip promised to be a drag, as it was overnight and the better part of 2 days. But Chris, Jenny, and I had been lucky at a pharmacy in one of the Indonesian cities where we stayed. Jenny and I had dressed in our best clothes and negotiated the purchase of some fine pharmaceutical benzedrine by posing as a doctor and nurse. Jenny knew enough of the jargon to convince the pharmacist that we were for real, and she got him to understand the word methamphetamine. He pulled out a huge 4-liter jar of bennies and asked how many we wanted. Jenny and I exchanged a quick glance that said, "Don't tell him we want them all," and we agreed that 100 would hold us. We carried these precious bennies on the train, and I have no recollection of how many we might have gobbled. Pretty soon we started playing a game of hearts from our wedged positions. Soon the locals surrounded us, took notice, and began some animated kibitzing. Exclamations and gestures told us which cards to play and what strategies to use. I don't even know if they knew hearts or if they played cards at all, but our area soon became a bedlam. That is, more than the normal bedlam on the train. We relished this for a while as we continued to ride our Benzedrine high. After a while, however, we tired of the advice and decided to embark on a new game which one of us called, for no good reason, Canorge Dribble. The game was characterized by Rafferty's rules, that is, no rules at all. The dealer would give a random number of cards to each of us, and then someone, in no order, would discard a card, or two, or three, saying, "Snarf," and then draw a card, or two, or three. He or she would then proudly display the hand to admiring spectators. Another of us would do the same procedure, saying, "Morph," and so on. We kept this random activity up for quite a time, but what sense has time when you are wired like a computer? Soon the spectators were advising us what cards to play and saying "snarf" or "morph" or "quangdiggle." The buggers had seemed to have deduced what the rules of Canorge Dribble were. The leg of our travel seems to have concluded in a fog that only lifted when the bennies ran out. I've often wondered whether the locals in Java might now be teaching their children and their chickens the finer points of playing the popular Western game of Canorge Dribble, although I don't want to know it strongly enough to go back. I want to announce that I have received my first piece of real mail this last week. Not the letters I've had to fabricate, but a real postcard with a stamp on it and the whole bit. This seals my notoriety. Agents of the Canadian government, namely postal personnel, have recognized the existence of Uncle Don and delivered this missive to him. I will now read this postcard while trying not to get fingerprints all over the new frame. Quote, "Dear Uncle Don, I have been listening to your show and I think it is great. I have two questions I'd love you to talk about. One, Bush versus Clinton. Is this going downhill or just more of the same? Two, biotechnology. What is the problem, the technology or who controls it? Keep up the good work. Signed, A. Fan." Well, I don't know who A. Fan is, but I suppose I have a listener in the Chinese community here. Great. I do not discriminate when it comes to handing out wisdom. Okay, A. Fan. I will try to address your question to the best of my ability. Since this seems to be a straight card, Mr. or Ms. Fan laid out over half a buck for the stamp alone, I will give it my best straight answer. As to Clinton versus Bush Light, I do not see any change in direction in the transition from the one to the other. The drift in the states since the fall of the Soviet Union has been toward more unilateral American actions, a buildup of military power, and repression at home while the welfare state is dismantled. Bush has grabbed the opportunity offered by the urban renewal sponsored by Al-Qaeda and rushed the program ahead under the cover of anti-terrorism. No, I see a few differences in the substance between these two presidents. I think the difference is in style. We know now that son of a Bush was a crook, but it seems that Clinton was a bit short on the scruple side himself. But they both front for the same group of super rich and do their bidding. No wonder half of eligible American voters find better things to do than vote. As a wag once said, don't vote, it just encourages them. I don't know what to think about on the biotechnology question. I don't know whether it is or ever will be a problem when it comes to cloning humans or parts thereof. It looks as though clones like Dolly the sheep have flaws that can be fatal. Cloning human parts might be like putting Lada parts in your Mercedes. As to using biotechnology to modify plants and animals, I think we are planting seeds, so to speak, that will come back to haunt us. Genetically modified organisms don't fit in the food chain like naturally evolved organisms. I think that the technology is flawed, and those who control it, like Monsanto, are a crew of greedy bastards who don't care what damage they cause as long as they make their profits. Those who do the research are amoral and are not considering the consequences of their research. I liken this to the scientific research that resulted in the atomic bomb. This whole field gives me the creeps. There was another piece of mail received by CFUR this week that it cannot be characterized as fan mail. It is from the Toronto law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe on behalf of the CCII, the Canadian Coalition of Illegitimate Individuals. The CCII is making thinly veiled threats of legal action against both the station and myself. They claim that Uncle Don is guilty of slander and or libel in those instances when I refer to Gordon Campbell as a, quote, bastard, unquote. The firm's letter alleges that I am subjecting their members to, quote, ridicule, derision, mockery, and possible discrimination, unquote, by associating the name of our premier with the term bastard. Well, I want to make a public apology here to the CCII and any other unaffiliated individuals in my radio audience who may feel offended by my characterization of the premier. It is difficult to use any common adjective to modify Mr. Campbell's name without offending someone. I suppose that if I had called Campbell a pirate, I could expect to hear from lawyers for the Buccaneers Union. I want to state publicly that I have no ill will toward anyone based on whether or not that person was born out of wedlock. This is an attribute, like race, that is out of the control of the individual and for which he or she should not be judged in any way. I will defend my past and probable future of the offending word. My lawyer has informed me that it is quite legitimate, so to speak, to use the term bastard in the sense of the second definition in the Funk and Wagnall Standard Dictionary, to wit, any spurious, irregular, inferior, or counterfeit thing. I suggest that the members of CCII develop a thicker skin. They should hear some of the things that I have been called by right-wing listeners. Bastard is a minor part of their characterizations. The federal government has just announced a list of 7 organizations that it considers to be terrorist organizations. It is now a crime in Canada to belong to any of these organizations or to contribute to them. The Globe and Mail states that this brief list excluded scores of groups listed by the United States as terrorists, or about 200 more identified by the United Nations. Gee, that's a lot of bad guys out there. It seems that this Canadian list is skewed in that all of the organizations listed are Muslim. In the interest of fairness and balance, I would humbly suggest a couple of large, dangerous groups of terrorists to be added to the list. These candidates are quite obvious to all of us. They are the governments of the United States of America and its puppet, Israel. These two organizations are guilty of blatant and ongoing acts of daily terror. They make the Islamic groups listed look like sandbox bullies. Fat chance they will ever be listed. This brings to mind another incident from my dim and distant past. This happens as a human ages. Obscure junk from the past pops up in my memory while I cannot remember what I had for breakfast. While I was going through the unbelievable bureaucratic processing that constituted the conversion from being a dumb civilian kid to being a dumb soldier kid, I was presented with a list of organizations that I had to certify that I had never belonged to. I wish I had a copy of that list now. It was humorous. The only one I recall is the American Lincoln Brigade. No, I never belonged to that one. In fact, that organization only existed around 1936, during the Spanish Civil War. It dissolved before I was born. The brigade volunteers had gone off to fight the Nazis and fascists of General Franco and his ally Hitler before World War II. These volunteers were heroes and are now recognized by most democratic countries as such. But there were dangerous communists among these volunteers, and you know that communism is a contagious disease. Remember that this was in an era just before the American scourge of McCarthyism, and the rabid fear of communism was in the air. Eisenhower was still president. BC Hydro has announced that it is turning over the management of its personnel to Accenture, a runaway American firm that is hiding in Bermuda to avoid taxes. Accenture has announced that it will be taking over the current staff and no one will be fired. If the foreign company will not be cutting staff or salaries, what is the advantage here for Hydro? Can't our own public company manage its own business? Where does the profit in the tax-dodging company come in? I also heard that Hydro has sold off its vehicle fleet to a private company. If this is true, and it follows the pattern that the NDP used when they sold the government fleet, we are in for a screwing. The government fleet was sold to some company that leased it back to the government. This resulted in a short-term infusion to the budget that would have pleased an Arthur Anderson auditor. An interesting paper shuffle that could only leave the public on the hook for more private profit. The leaseback arrangement called for the new owners to maintain the vehicles at a flat rate for the initial contract period. This sounds good so far, right? Well, a friend in the old Ministry of Environment told me that when the initial period was over, the maintenance fee about doubled. What could the ministries do? These were not its vehicles anymore. My friend's particular office had to give up half of its vehicles to stay within their budget. Of course, who cares if the Ministry of Environment or its successor does its job? They're just a bunch of preservationists who stand in the way of development. Corporations will look after our welfare. Watch for more nibbling away at hydro before the wholesale giving away of our prize utility in preparation for tripling rates to be competitive. Speaking of competition, the redefinition of this word is one of the most insidious tricks of monopoly capitalism. Spokesmen for the corporations stand the concept of competition on its head with straight faces. I remember a spokesman for an oil company defending another gasoline price increase. He had been confronted with the obvious price collusion that we see everywhere as prices rise in lockstep. When asked why his company matched the price rise of its so-called rivals to the nearest tenth of a cent, he said, through a straight face, that his company had to be competitive. Hey, bro, that is not the way it is supposed to work. Time for another anecdote. I have to tell you with mixed feelings that there will never be a blood relative to take over for me when I meet my final reward and go to ashes. I never aspired to go to the Christian heaven with all those goody-goody Christians. I might make it better as a Muslim martyr with all those virgins in paradise, but then I never thought much of virgins as a class. I guess I would be better off as ashes. No, I have no blood relatives but a single brother who lives in North Carolina, and he will die childless and unwed. He's the only person I know who converted from the middle class to hillbillyism. Well, to each his own. He came up to visit me and my wife here in the North Country. He stayed with us for a week or so before returning to hillbilly heaven, vowing never to return. My brother is a full-blown alcoholic, and he revels in his status. He usually waits until about 9 a.m. before cracking his first Budweiser and continues all day. The last time I was down there, when my mother was dying, I stayed with Brother John and watched his habits for 18 long days. In the morning, he dragged himself off his sofa, he had no bed in his ramshackle bungalow that he rented, and counted the empty cans from the night before to see if he had a hangover. Living on beer, American beer at that, and junk food, he has survived over 50 years. If alcohol is a preservative, he may live forever. While he was here, he took on a project of clearing some of our brush. He would cut some brush, drink a beer, put the brush in my truck, drink a beer, haul the brush to the burning pile, drink a beer, and repeat the process. This went on for a remarkable time until my wife called us in for supper. Brother was not used to Canadian beer, so he was some 3 or 4 quarters drunk by the time he came in. He passed out with his face in a plate of chili, and I didn't get a picture. When we revived him, he declined the offer of a bed, too civilized for him, I guess, and went out to sleep on our covered deck. In the morning, we found him where we had left him, except that he had appropriated my little electric chainsaw to use as a pillow. As I said, by mutual agreement, he has not been back. Back now to pillorying corporations. The ubiquitous corporations that look after our welfare and spread their benefits amongst us are not the creations of a beneficent nature, nor were their charters set down from the mountains on stone tablets. Corporations exist by virtue of charters granted by governments. It is supposed that there will be some quid pro quo for society in this granting of the right to act as an acquisitive entity. Not necessarily. Corporations began as joint stock companies. One of the earliest and most successful was the Hudson's Bay Company. Under a British royal charter, the bay was given the right to carry on business in the New World, and it was given grants of land by the Crown to operate that business. Leave aside the fact that the land in question was not the Crown's to give. That has never stopped the settlers on First Nations land. The charter specified what the company could do, the term of the charter, and other details. From the joint stock company grew the modern corporation. As the law evolved, the corporation became a legal person with the rights of a human person. This remarkable conclusion was achieved by weasel lawyers through a series of cleverly engineered court decisions. In fact, a corporation is not only a person under the law with the rights that you enjoy, it has more rights than you. You will die and be subjected to taxes and death duties. A corporation is immortal unless it goes bankrupt or is dissolved. It can continue to grow forever, and like the Accenture company that hides in Bermuda, it can escape taxation by migrating to a tax haven. No immigration laws preventing the moving of corporations like real human migrants. These guys are welcome everywhere with benefits and perks. Now corporations are recognized no matter where they are chartered. In many ways, we cannot favor Canadian corporations over American or Mexican ones under the North American Free Trade Agreement. This has led to a rush to incorporate in jurisdictions that are the least strict in what their corporations do. In the United States, it was Delaware that first discovered that they could make money by issuing charters to corporations under lax terms. The other states had to allow the operation of corporations from Delaware under the same terms as their own. As expected, this led to a downward spiral of state standards. There is still a disproportionate number of American corporations chartered in Delaware, but this is changing as these monsters are finding the allure of tax havens irresistible. Canada, of course, has to recognize foreign corporations. Many of them have incorporated branch plants here and now claim to be Canadian, mainly for tax purposes. If you think that General Motors of Canada has any allegiance to Canada, I have some Florida land for you. Have you heard of TIPS? This son of a bush's program to turn upwards of 1 million Americans into spies on the activities of other Americans, and this is just the initial step. They are looking to recruit as many as 4% of the American people as internal spies. In case you still had a shred of belief left in son of a Bush's attachment to the rights of Americans, this should dispel such illusions. The Terrorism Information and Protection System is to recruit workers who are supposedly in touch with the normal patterns of neighborhoods and what constitutes good Americanism. They are looking for postal workers, truck drivers, delivery men, and service personnel who normally go into homes to work. So the guy who fixes my brother's phone, repairs the toilet, or cleans the carpets may be reading the titles on his books to make sure that he is reading stuff approved by the Reader's Digest. It has not been mentioned yet, but I suppose if his book titles don't pass scrutiny, the next service personnel to visit his place will place a bug or camera to watch him do his subversive reading. So far, the Teamsters, with 500,000 truck drivers and 250,000 members in the United Parcel Service, has expressed its patriotic support. Watch for the clone of this system of spies to emerge in Canada, or does it perhaps exist already? Even big government earned big government brownie points by turning in Uncle Don as a dangerous radical. Phone now. This is CFUR, Canada's favorite university radio at 88.7. Send irate and threatening letters to Uncle Don, care of CFUR, 3333 University Way, Prince George, V2N4Z9. Do it today. No word yet on my invitation to Son of a Bush to come here for a debate interview on the air. I think my letter made it to the White House as my phone is making funny noises and all of my letters are taped shut. I've had my hydrometer read 3 days in a row. We wanted our politicians to show up in Salt Lake City to show the flag, didn't we? Don't we want all of those Mormons who have not had the opportunity to knock on Canadian doors to know that we are here? After all, their government spent a lot of money bribing the Olympic Committee to hold the Olympic jock contest there, and we should show our support for their investment. It seems that we supported their economy to the tune of almost $400,000 for accommodation during the games. Well, we don't want our liberal politicians to sleep in the YMCA, do we? They showed some real style in Salt Lake City. According to the Globe and Mail, they went upscale. They paid as much as $3,476 per night for a single suite. That was our money, of course. As with management of private corporations, the politicians think they have a right to dip into the public till for as much as they please. This attitude is at the root of the current stock market collapse, which has yet to make itself in the larger economy. Hang on for a rough ride. I'm tired of hearing about 9/11 and, quote, the events of 11 September and that cliche, since 11 September, everything has changed. Bull. There are a few things that I would like to clarify. We were not attacked last September. They were attacked. And it was not an attack on American civilization, such as it is. It was two symbols of American imperialism that were attacked. The World Trade Center in New York, a symbol of the financial empire, and the Pentagon, a symbol of the military empire. The people who were killed were just collateral damage, as the Pentagon likes to call the innocent victims of its adventures. If the terrorists had really wanted to kill masses of people, they could have chosen other targets. An attack on nuclear power plants would have killed millions, but the symbolism would not have been the same. Am I alone in regretting that the fourth plane went down uselessly in a field in Pennsylvania? At the risk of shocking listeners, I will say that I would not have regretted seeing the fourth plane having hit the White House. Not that I would want to see any collateral damage amongst the leaders of the Western world, but it would have finished a job started during the War of 1812 when Canadians set fire to the White House. And things have not fundamentally changed since early September. They are just a more intense and open continuation of how things used to be going. Governments can now pursue their agendas of restricting citizen freedom more openly than before the attacks. Everything is now done under the guise of security for those citizens. Now the Yanks can openly establish a local system of spies with the TIPS program and claim that it will make the country more secure. It will make capitalism more secure by gathering more information on its opponents. If you want to pin down the time when everything changed, it was when the Soviet Union collapsed and the capitalist countries no longer had to put on a friendly face to sway the uncommitted countries of the world to our side. If you think our governments are concerned with your privacy and individual freedoms, you are late for your morning bingo session. Please turn off the radio and go. I look forward to receiving irate letters. Do not bother telephoning us unless you want to encourage my program director. He loves controversy and judges the effectiveness of the station by the number of complaints. Write to Uncle Don, care of CFUR, 3333 University Way, Prince George, V2N4Z9. I warn you that anything you write may be read and ridiculed on the air. I have just run out of time. Well, kiddies, this is Uncle Don's program for another week. I guess that will take care of the little bastards for another week.